If you look at it, every day is cause for celebration. You celebrate a friend for their promotion, their baby, their wedding, their life thing. You can celebrate yourself for getting a night to sit on a couch and watch a whole lot of baseball. Or maybe you can just celebrate living in 2022, where you can get beer, wine, and spirits delivered from Drizly in under 60 minutes without ever leaving your couch. Drizly is the most convenient way to buy beer, wine, and spirits, with delivery to your doorstep in under 60 minutes. Drizly is the number one app for alcohol delivery. With Drizly, you get home delivery in under 60 minutes, and you can shop across a variety of stores. Instead of bouncing from store to store looking for what you want at the right price, you can get exactly what you want with Drizly. Right now, Drizly is giving all new customers $5 off their first order if they use the code FAST5. That's F-A-S-T number 5. So download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's D-R-I-Z-L-Y.com. And use the promo code FAST5. That's F-A-S-T number 5 for $5 off your first order. That's $5 off your first order. Just use promo code FAST5 at checkout.
Welcome to today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is my colleague Joe Healy. And we are here on Tuesday, June 7th, to wrap up regionals. NCAA tournament got underway over the weekend, and it was a packed out weekend, as regionals weekend always is. It was a fun weekend of college baseball around the country, as we narrowed the field already to 16 teams. Joe and I were both at regionals. Joe was in Blacksburg, I was in College Park, but we were monitoring what was going on around the country, and so we have a lot to get to today here on the podcast. We're going to try and hit on all 16 of the regionals, and we'll maybe start to take a peek forward at super regionals, but really that we're going to save the preview. If you're here to get the breakdown on super regionals, you're gonna have to wait till later in the week, but make sure you are subscribed to the Baseball America College Podcast, because we come at you twice a week throughout the postseason, and so favorite podcasting app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, we'll have that preview for you on Thursday. But today, Joe, today we're going to focus on the regionals themselves. And like I said, it was a fun weekend of college baseball.
Yeah, I'd say so. It was, it took a little time to get going. I feel like Friday was not without interesting things, but Friday was extremely chalky, and I think hinted at the idea that we weren't going to have a lot of bananas regional winners, right? And that obviously turned out to be the case, but things did pick up on Saturday. We started getting some of the typical regional craziness on Saturday, and Sunday was even more. Saturday was really marked by a really, really good winner's bracket evening window in terms of quality. You know, Sunday was just kind of the typical regional final window was just bonkers, because you're getting to the point where teams are getting desperate and running out of pitching and the whole thing. And we still got a pretty good Monday. You know, the Monday games are, for my money, regional Monday games are some of the most stressful games. I'm glad I'm not a fan of this, and don't have rooting interests and all that, because they're stressful enough for me as just a neutral observer. I can't imagine having a team in a regional final on Monday. That just seems like not a very healthy way to live, because no one has pitching. No one feels comfortable. You know, it's going to be a fight from the start. Those are just stressful innings from start to finish. But we got, I think it was 10 games yesterday, and a lot of them delivered. So a good weekend that, you know, started off slow, but by the end it was, you know, it felt like it always does in regionals. And that's just kind of crazy and fun and exhilarating and exhausting.
I don't want to, you know, we want to focus on the games. We don't want to focus as much on some of the regional tropes or extended storylines that always seem to pop up, like the pitching question, the format question, etc. But one thing I did want to touch on, Joe, before we dive into the region by region stuff, this year, for the first time since 2009, and I think it was for the third or fourth time, I think the fourth time since the format expanded to 64 teams in 1999, all 16 number one seeds
won. No, on their opening game, there were no 4 seed over 1 seed upsets. And you mentioned that there were, you know, on Friday, everything was pretty chalky. And, you know, the 2-3 games were about 50-50, but there were no colossal upsets because none of the 4 seeds won. And I mean, I put that down, I think, mostly to there were a lot of upsets in conference tournaments. That's why bids kept getting stolen and the bubble kept shrinking. And that meant that the 4 seeds were not that great. But maybe that, like, I haven't really taken a dive into that to see how accurate that is. Did you think this was more about the ones or the fours or just randomness?
Well, so it's interesting. So if you made me answer, I'd say probably randomness. I mean, that's typically the answer in these kind of things. We always look for patterns and answers, and randomness controls so much of it. My initial thought was, though, because I've thought about this too, my initial thought was the 4 seeds being weaker. And I think they probably were, because again, we had some conference tournament upsets. However, most of the conferences we're talking about being 4 seeds are one bid leagues, and the team coming out of those conferences wasn't going to be awesome anyway, right? And then the leagues where we may have missed out on a team that could have given somebody a run, like if you really thought Davidson could have given you a run, well, VCU did just as good. I mean, VCU got to a regional final and went 2-0 and pushed UNC and the whole
bit. They did, but they got to the 3 line because for sure there were some of these upsets. You know, if there are less upsets, then you don't have to push some of these teams to the 3 line.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to really examine, like, what 3s should have been 4s, you know, because VCU also felt like
VCU is not a great example of that, because their RPI was pretty good. Ultimately, like, Davidson had a worse RPI and would have been a 4, but VCU's was not a surprising 3. Columbia, which got to a regional final, probably shouldn't have been a 3, but at the same time, their RPI was. I just felt like the resume didn't really reflect that, except for the RPI. You know, Penn deserved a 3, I felt like, for beating A&M. But they didn't make it. You know, Columbia didn't have that on their resume.
Yeah. So it's an interesting conversation, because I've spent some time thinking about it, although a regional weekend is busy enough. You don't really have a lot of time to sit around and ponder things. No. That is definitely something to look at, maybe if I have a little more time, just because my perception was, yeah, it's like a weak 4 seed crop. And then, but I'd have to really go through and examine, like, okay, well, how many teams got pushed to the 3 that should have been 4s? Because maybe that number is lower than we think. I don't know. So I would put it to randomness. I also just think there's something to, like, we kept talking about the mediocrity at the top of college baseball this year. And I stand by that. And I think we saw some of that over the weekend. But it also says something that we kept being kind of nonplussed by the teams that have populated the top 10 and top 15 of the rankings, and yet they stayed in the top 10 or top 15 of the rankings. So I think that just goes to show, like, okay, we don't love some of these teams that are hosting regionals. And in some case, we don't love some of these teams that are top 8s, but nobody's taking it from them. So I think there's something there too, but I think just general randomness, and we were kind of due for a year like this, and we have years like this from time to time. And, you know, it's part of not knowing what to expect when we go into a regional weekend.
I actually thought you were going somewhere slightly different with that, when you started down the road of being nonplussed with those teams. We also tried a variety of teams at the back of the top 25 early in the season, and a lot of them didn't stick. And then, you know, by the end of the season, when we were, you know, looking for teams, we weren't finding that many teams that we really liked, and there just weren't. I guess to me, that also speaks to the quality of mid-major champions and the like, that, you know, if the top end of the sport was a little mediocre this year, so was the bottom end. And ultimately, by far the majority of the number one seeds advanced. So maybe it does say a lot about the quality of the ones, how they played this weekend, that so many of them not only won their first game, and we do know what that means towards winning the whole regional, but they won their first game and they advanced. So maybe these teams just were appropriately rewarded as the top 16 teams, by and large. Alrighty though, let's get rolling here. We might as well just start with the number one overall seed. That's Tennessee. They swept through the Knoxville Regional. If you look at the score, it says that they really didn't sweat that much. If you just look at the final scores, they beat Alabama State 10-0. And then they, you know, scored a bunch of runs on Campbell. And the final score against Georgia Tech in the regional final is not that close. But in reality, Joe, they really had to sweat. They had to come back against Campbell and Georgia Tech. And the Georgia Tech comeback, they left just about as late as they possibly could leave it.
Yeah, I mean, it was I think we talked about this in the preview episode, but like on the spectrum of draws they could have gotten, it's actually kind of a tricky draw for them, considering they're the number one overall seed. You know, they, you know, got Campbell, which we know how talented they are, and we saw how they pushed them. And we got Georgia Tech that is tricky because it's an elite offense at the bare minimum. And so if they find pitching, and they did, by the way, like that's the thing, is closer Zach Maxwell, they flip him to a starter in the regional final and throws. I didn't see every out of this outing, but I was keeping up with it pretty closely and looked as good as I've ever seen him look, frankly. And so he throws the game of his career and his stuff is elite. And like bada bing, that puts Tennessee in a tricky situation. So yeah, they really did get pushed, and maybe that's a good thing rather than coasting through it. We know Notre Dame is going to be game. You know, and we'll talk about Notre Dame later, of course, but you know, Notre Dame back-to-back years gets the what turned out to be the national champions in super regionals and is now facing the prohibitive favorite to be national champions in super regionals. So back-to-back tough ones there. But yeah, I mean, this was not, there are some teams that kind of waltz through regionals. Tennessee was not one of them. I don't think that's on them necessarily. I don't think they did anything particularly poorly. I just think they got a relatively tough draw by a couple teams that were game for it. You know, Campbell obviously is talented enough, and Georgia Tech is not only talented, but they are a team that you know, does sometimes kind of play up to the moment and play down to opponents that aren't as big a deal. So that, you know, seeing that wasn't too much of a surprise, and Tennessee getting through it also not much of a surprise.
I'm not unconcerned about the way Tennessee pitched this weekend. 7 runs to Campbell, 6 runs to Georgia Tech. I mean, both of those teams can hit, and they were playing in Knoxville, and obviously the ball was jumping there. If you look at the scores throughout the weekend, you know, whether they involve Tennessee or not, something to consider going forward is all. But yeah, for the most part here, Tennessee just went out and did a job, and they move on. And so do we. Let's go to Stanford, number 2 seed. Stanford wins the Stanford Regional. And this one, as it feels like so often happens, Stanford is on this run where they host regionals every year, and it just feels like every single year Stanford gets pushed. This year it was Texas State doing the pushing. Texas State was the 2 seed, and they won the winner's bracket game on Saturday, forcing Stanford to fight back through the loser's bracket, and Stanford was game to do it. But again, even on in game 7 on Monday night, Stanford needed to score 3 runs in the bottom of the 9th to walk it off against Texas State after they fell behind in the top of the 9th. And they did it in like unbelievable fashion, back-to-back home runs to lead off the 9th inning for Stanford. And then, you know, little used freshman comes through as a pinch hitter to walk off your regional final. Like it was crazy scenes last night at Sunken.
Yeah, you feel for Texas State. I mean, with credit to Stanford, obviously, like that's a impressive comeback. You know, you feel for Texas State because they did the hard part, I feel like, which is as kind of the underdog in a Monday regional final, like you found the pitching. Like you, I mean, that was a 1-1 game going to the 9th. Like you held off.
Speaking of that, do you think, so they used they went closer to start Stivers, that game.
Yeah.
And he's really good. Do you think they maybe regret that? Like, should they have flipped it? Should they have tried to open and then go to Stivers in like the 3rd inning or whatever?
It's a good question. I mean, that's easy to say. And I know you're just throwing it out there. Like, I don't, you know,
but yes, I'm not here to say that they screwed this up. It's just a, like you say, like, oh, they did the hard part. They found the pitching, but I don't know. Like a lot of people would tell you, well, the hard part is the last 3 outs of the game, Joe.
Yeah,
and
for
they
sure.
Didn't have the closer for it because they used him as the starter, which is the whole reason why they're in the situation to begin with. But
how, like the interesting kind of, I mean, we could really debate this all day because this is how these regional, and I think you'd agree with me, is there's certain like archetypes of regional, especially once you get to the back end of a regional, there are certain archetype of games. And a very common one is regional final, or especially a game seven regional final on a Monday. Underdog team has nothing left. They throw a flyer out there, whether it's bringing a guy back or a guy who hasn't pitched since April or whatever. And the host team puts up seven runs in two innings. And the game ends 7-4 because they found the pitching eventually. Maybe they got to their better guys or whatever. But they tried a gambit to start the game and took a flyer and it just didn't work. And so like you're never going to know that, but that is a pretty common way these games can go. And so I like that. Look, Stivers is the one guy who, now they've got other guys, Levi Wells, and they tried Levi Wells to close this game. We saw it. That did not work out. But Stivers is the guy on their staff that has the stuff over some period of time to shut down Stanford. And obviously it worked for a long, long time, right up until they moved off of that. And I'm not saying they should have kept him in there. He threw a lot of pitches, but you know, it was working. It worked. But you feel for them because they stared down Stanford in that offense on a Monday regional final, held them down and then just couldn't hold it. And that's tough. And obviously you would have felt, if you're Texas State, this is not, no disrespect to UConn, but if you're Texas State, you feel pretty, I mean, you just beat Stanford in Stanford. Like you feel like you at least have a puncher's chance against UConn in a super. UConn, by the way, also would have felt that way. Real missed opportunity there. And that's the way regionals work. I mean, history is littered with situations like that where, you know, you win a regional and your path to Omaha is actually easier through supers than it was through regionals. And that's just the way it goes. But credit to Stanford because they've lost, you know, they've lost home regionals before. You know, they lost a couple to Fullerton there several years ago. But, you know, they come through and had to fight for it.
Absolutely. And just continue to be impressed by that Stanford offense. You can't not be. Let's move on, though. Let's go to Corvallis. Oregon State was the number three seed. And boy, they made this hard. But Oregon State advances. Oregon State got pushed harder by a four seed than any other team. And they had, I don't know, the second or third worst four seed in the field in New Mexico State. But New Mexico State took them to extra innings on Friday. Oregon State did manage to win that game and then won the winner's bracket game to face Vanderbilt in the finals. Vanderbilt forced a game seven and was very feisty in that game seven, but Oregon State was able to come out on top. I don't know. Oregon State just, the last month, it hasn't been the same for them. I don't have a great feel for exactly what's happened, but they are living far more on the edge than they did in the early to middle part of the season.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, this was real shaky. And you know, you talk about, this was an example where Friday's games really didn't matter. I mean, they mattered, of course, but you know, the results, we could not read much into them because New Mexico State goes out, you know, Saturday early and gets just whomped by Vanderbilt and is gone, which you saw that coming because New Mexico State put all their eggs in winning that first game, and you get
and the mental exhaustion of losing. Like, oh yes. They came back to tie the game in the ninth and then they lose an extra innings. To get back up, I don't know, 12 hours later to play again, like that's hard.
Yeah. And you see that pretty commonly. I feel like, you know, four seed gives a good punch on Friday and then just has nothing for Saturday. And then of course, San Diego, like with Bryson Moss, just shuts down Vanderbilt. And then, you know, San Diego and New Mexico State didn't have much left after that opening day. Cause San Diego got outscored, by the way, I'm doing the math here, 26-7 in losses to Oregon State and Vanderbilt the next 2 days. So, the rest of the regional did not go well for them there. But yeah, I mean, we knew, like, Vanderbilt did exactly in this regional, I felt like, did exactly what we could have predicted they would do based on how up and down their season has been, right? They are like pretty unimpressive to start in losing to San Diego, but they
look pretty, fairness, Bryson Watts is
he is very good. He is very good. Yes. But then they handle their business against, you know, New Mexico State and San Diego. And then they just put it on Oregon State in the first regional final game. And you're like, okay, here we go. And then they just can't quite close it. You know, Oregon State just does enough. on Monday. And so that was very much like Vanderbilt's season in a microcosm. And, you know, Oregon State moving on by the skin of their teeth, and don't look now, but like the team they are matched up with now is, you know, playing really, really hot, and is probably one of the more uniquely difficult matchups for what is ailing Oregon State at this point.
Yeah. He's talking about Auburn, and I mean, we'll obviously get into this on Thursday, but like, yeah, I don't love the matchup for Auburn either, but like, that's just cause I'm still thinking about Oregon State in like late April and early May. The way Oregon State's playing now, Auburn may present a whole bunch of problems for them. But we'll see. We'll get into that as things go. And my final thought on Corvallis is just like, seeing what Vanderbilt did, like that was kind of what we were always waiting for them to do in a way. They just didn't quite have it in them to beat Mott's. And that put you lose the first game. It's it makes everything harder. We know this. And ultimately that was the undoing of Oregon State. Okay, let's go to Blacksburg. Number 4 seed Virginia Tech. Joe, this is where you were, and Virginia Tech did not sweat this one too hard. Gonzaga, very disappointing. Never the 2 seed here. Virginia Tech never had to play them. Instead, it was Columbia that was the foil for the Hokies.
Yeah, I mean, the Hokies get pushed a little by Wright State in the opener. Wright State doing the thing that Wright State does in regionals, but they were never, at least for me, like I'm sure in the dugout it was a very different experience, but from where I was sitting, I never felt like they were in trouble against Wright State because they were always going to score. But yeah, the disappointing part of the regional was, just from a competition standpoint, is you never got to see Gonzaga. Well, you didn't get to see Gonzaga against Virginia Tech at all, but you certainly, even if they had come back Gonzaga to get to a regional final, we wouldn't have seen the best arms against Virginia Tech. And part of that is because their best arms didn't pitch well. Columbia got to Gabriel Hughes in the first game of the regional. And even though they won it, Wright State got to William Kempner in the second game. And then they came back with Vreeling against Columbia, and you know, Vreeling didn't really have much for Columbia. And so just, yeah, disappointing weekend for Gonzaga. That's obviously just quickly on them, like a little postmortem. I mean, that's a team that, you know, this was really their shot to kind of make that kind of noise, because, you know, they're losing guys to the draft. They've got some veterans in the lineup that are moving on. So they're going to have a little bit of rebuilding to do, I believe, ahead of next year. So it's disappointing that they didn't, they really played their worst weekend of the season this weekend. But with Virginia Tech, they swung the bats exactly as well as we thought they were going to, you know, and sure, I guess we can talk about, okay, if they didn't have to face Gonzaga, how good was the pitching they saw? And hey, I hear you, like, I get it. You know, Columbia played pretty well, but it was mostly offense that Columbia was doing. That was because a Columbia team can hit a fastball. Like, they're just on time on every fastball that was over the plate. So kudos to them. But Virginia Tech's offense was just too overwhelming for everybody in this regional. And I suspect, you know, if they beat Oklahoma this weekend, that's where it's going to come from. Because, you know, Virginia Tech, you know, I mean, Drew Hackenberg was not particularly good in the opener against Wright State. There's some concern about where he's at right now, because the tail end of this season was not particularly good for him. Griffin Green is, you know, is what he is. They're really piecing it together in the bullpen. There's a lot of teams that are doing that right now. They've got a lot of choices. They've got a lot of options. They're similar to like an LSU in that regard. They've got a lot of options, but when it gets sideways, it really gets sideways on them. We saw that against Wright State, and they were able to survive it. You know, against a team like Oklahoma, it'll be a little bit of a different story. But yeah, they, you know, especially once they got past the difficult part against Wright State, this wasn't anything too challenging for the Hokies.
Disappointing for Gonzaga as an end to the season. Still a spectacular year, but this is now 2 years in a row where, you know, they look amazing for the first 4 months of the year, whatever, and then get tripped up at the end. It probably doesn't say anything much of anything, but that's it's just been a tough couple postseasons here for the Bulldogs. But does not take away from what they've accomplished over the last 2 seasons. Number 5, Texas A&M and College Station. the final scores indicate that they didn't get pushed. They got pushed, but they still sweep. Oral Roberts was not an issue on Friday. Then the Cajuns were game in the winner's bracket, but A&M pulls out a 9-6 win. And then in the regional final, TCU was absolutely game, but was not, like, just, it looked like they kind of just ran out of gas in the ninth inning, and A&M was ready to take advantage of that. But we did get the TCU-A&M game that we wanted. We got the Schlossnagel-Sarluis game that we wanted. I didn't get the extra innings game that I wanted for all of my friends that were covering that game. I just feel like you should get the full TCU-A&M experience, and extra innings is a part of that. But they this was a fun one, despite the fact that A&M swept through it. You know, there were so many other regionals that went to game sevens that, you know, those were probably the ones that we would think back as like being the exciting regionals. But this one was it was pretty fun.
Yeah, I thought so too. Like, so my general process for this weekend is obviously I'm watching what's in front of me, but then on my phone I would have something up and I'd put my headphones on and be watching something else. And typically I would have it on the the Squeeze Play on ESPN Plus. Shout out to Schick and Chris Budden and Mike Rooney and Chris Burke. They did a great job this weekend and what's always a taxing event for them. And then when something particularly caught my fancy, I would just flip over to that game. Once we'd get to like a ninth inning or whatever, because, you know, Squeeze Play was doing a lot of quad boxes and stuff, which is great. But like, if you were looking to really, especially since I'm watching,
it's not great on a phone.
Yeah, so you go from a phone size screen to a quad box on a phone. Like, there was a lot of Joe leaning over to try to read scoreboards on quad boxes. So, you know, I'd go to a specific game. Anyway, moral of the story, these games always intrigued me to the point where I'd start to go to a different game or start to like actually watch that specific game. And then as I was doing so, I realized like, oh, this game has, you know, kind of gotten out of hand, or like, it's not as interesting as it was anymore. It was always A&M just kind of taking control. And so kudos to them, because, you know, this was a team that I think a lot of people looked at as, especially once you saw TCU, you know, the Cajuns present like a different, unique challenge as a team. So I think once people saw the draw, thought like, okay, this actually could be kind of dicey for an A&M team that I think people are still kind of unsure about. But they really handled it. I mean, yes, they got pushed for sure, 100%. But considering it was a tough draw, like, I was impressed with the way they handled it.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for that. I also was pretty impressed with TCU for fighting through the loser's bracket to get back to the final. Once they lost that opener to the Cajuns, that obviously that makes everything very difficult for them. And, you know, I just wasn't sure that. Clearly wasn't the deepest team on the mound for any number of reasons this year, but they did a good job to get to Sunday night. All right, Coral Gables, number 6 seed Miami hosted. It also hosted I don't actually know if this made it to Tropical Storm or Tropical Depression. I lost interest in whether the storm is going to get named or not officially, but anyway, there was a lot of rain there. They got delayed significantly. They're behind a day fully. But ultimately they were able to play, and it is Ole Miss that comes out of this one. Miami goes a very disappointing 1-2. They beat Canisius. Canisius frankly played better than I would have expected against Miami, though. And then Miami lost a pair of one run games to Ole Miss and Arizona, two teams that you don't really associate playing low scoring one run games with, but Miami did against them, and they lost. Ole Miss won that winner's bracket game 2-1. I mean, who saw that coming, first of all? And then they rather predictably beat Arizona 22-6. In the final, Arizona was out of pitching at that point, and Ole Miss was very happy to take advantage.
Yeah, really up until the last, you know, few innings of that game, like, when you consider that basically every team in this field had concerns about what they were going to be able to do on the mound, big picture concerns. Now I know Ole Miss has been a lot better lately, but I'm just saying, like, if you look at the entirety of the season and also the weather situation, like, this regional was, and also that because of the weather, by the way, they were condensing. So they played like three games on Saturday. Like, they were trying to get back on schedule throughout the weekend, and they did a good job. These games were played so much better than they had any business to be played. Like, you know, the scores here, and on a weekend where you've got, yes, the Ole Miss put up 22 runs in the final. Okay. But, you know, we've got in regionals all over the place, like 20 run games, like just left and right. And here you've got 4-3, 2-1, 7-4, 7-5, like really well played regional, fairly well pitched. You know, maybe the damp conditions like are part of that. I don't know. I wasn't there, but, you know, considering the situation, like I came away kind of like impressed by like, great job guys. Like collectively you showed well, this regional did not become like a complete mess because of rain and long, you know, interminably long games with huge final scores. Like I, you know, that just looked like a nice, normal, well-played regional.
Indeed. Indeed. And, you know, we now have, the trope, I guess, of a last four in team making it to super regionals, in Ole Miss. They're gonna, I'm sure, feel like, I mean, they're two wins away from Omaha. They're going to feel like they have a very real chance, this weekend against Southern Miss, in Hattiesburg. And, you know, the way that they pitched this weekend, I mean, it was very impressive. That Miami team can hit, and Ole Miss held them to one run in the biggest game of the season to that point. And, so I think you got to be impressed with the way Ole Miss handled this. They'd had an extended layoff since that SEC tournament loss, and did not seem to affect them one bit. Alrighty, moving on. Number seven overall seed was Oklahoma State. They hosted in Stillwater, and you want crazy regional. That's what Stillwater delivered. Joe, I don't even know how to begin to summarize this. Arkansas wins ultimately. They take out Oklahoma State in the final. It was not easy for anyone. There was offense all over the place. There were comebacks all over the place. Oklahoma State, in an elimination game on Sunday, was at one point down 12-0 against Missouri State and comes back to win 29-15. That was on the heels of Arkansas coming back to win 20-12 in the winner's bracket game the night before, and Oklahoma State blowing a lead to allow that to happen in an excruciating fashion. Oklahoma State wins the first final game in extra innings, and then Arkansas won a much more normal Monday game. That was a little disappointing. That was only 7-3, not as much drama, but they brought plenty of craziness on Saturday and Sunday here.
No kidding. I mean, this, there are just layers on at this regional when you take into consider, for example, the first game of the day on Saturday, Missouri State is down 7-1 to Grand Canyon in the eighth inning or seventh or something, and comes back to win that game. And it is not even on the board for like the most like interesting game or thing to happen here. Yeah. I mean, Oklahoma State's like on the ropes, and I tweeted about it. Like that is also a thing that happens. Like team takes a tough loss Saturday night, which Oklahoma State did, where Arkansas just blitzed them late after what was already a tight game throughout. And then they come out flat on Sunday. And that's kind of all she wrote because of the emotional swing there. And Oklahoma State storms back and they play a 5-hour game, and then we get extra innings. Like, I mean, this regional absolutely delivered in terms of drama, even if it fell short in terms of being a thing of beauty, I would say. I think this was a regional that just preyed so much on the weaknesses of the teams that were involved in it, where, you know, neither Oklahoma State or Arkansas really felt great about what they were doing on the mound. And they were just like scrounging around for answers throughout. Arkansas ended up finding, you know, just basically the difference is Arkansas found one or two more answers, right? I mean, like Zach Morris pitched pretty well on Monday to get them started, gave them like 3 1/3. And they found, you know, a couple of scoreless innings on the back end. And that was really the difference there. You know, and that's kind of what we see on Monday regionals. And I felt like, yes, Oklahoma State was at home, but this is precisely the type of regional that Arkansas can win, is when you get into kind of these like sloppy high scoring games you're fighting through. And so I'm not surprised to see this result here, even if you're always a little surprised when the host goes down.
Yeah, not only the host, but a top eight seed, even if it was one that we had been, I don't know, questioning much of the season. But this one was crazy. I don't even know how to begin to say anything about it, so I'm not going to try to continue. I think that was a pretty good summary from you, Joe. And I am just going to continue to wonder what is happening in Stillwater and move on. Let's go to Greenville. East Carolina was the number eight overall seed, and East Carolina comes out with a regional win. They knock off Coastal in the championship game there. I don't want to say ECU like walked through this by any means. Like, Coastal did force a second championship game, and Virginia gave ECU a really good go in the winner's bracket game on Saturday. They got the tying run to the plate or on base late in that game, but weren't able to cash it in. But at the same time, ECU just felt like they were in control much of the weekend.
I think that's right. I mean, obviously any regional that goes to a Monday by definition is they got pushed a little bit. I think you can compartmentalize a little bit that, like, Coastal found a pitcher. Like, Nick Parker threw the ball. I haven't looked at the box scores across the entire regional, but perhaps the best start anyone turned in the entire weekend. And he happened to do it in the first regional final. And if you're East Carolina, you're just like, okay, set that aside. But they controlled Monday from the jump, and they scored a bunch of runs late that made the final score look a little uglier than it really was, but they controlled it from start to finish. And again, we talk about Arkansas winning a kind of regional that it could win. I mean, East Carolina really did a good job with doing what they do on the mound. So when you get to Monday and everyone's kind of scrounging around for answers, like, that's the way East Carolina likes to play. Like, they're comfortable with that. And I think you saw that on Monday where, you know, Coastal brought back a starter in Reed Van Scooter who had thrown on Friday. And not that they were out there trying to get six innings out of him, but they just tried that and it didn't work. And meanwhile, you know, ECU started with a reliever in Carter Spivey. And that ended up really being the difference, because ECU got to Van Scooter early and Coastal got off to a slower start, and that really kind of allowed ECU to set the pace, if you will. So, yeah, I thought they handled it well. This weekend should be crazy in Greenville. That's the other thing about Greenville that stands out to me, is beyond the games, because the game, you know, I don't know, this was a regional that I didn't find myself, except for the ECU-Virginia game, I guess, Saturday night, I didn't find myself overly drawn in. However, the atmosphere looked absolutely nuts. I don't know how they're actually allowed. I know we've talked about this before. I don't know. And I love it, so I'm not complaining about it, but I don't know how they're allowed to let people hang over the wall in the outfield in Greenville. It seems like having fans putting their arms over the fence into the field of play, like, is technically not allowed. I guess they just can't really enforce that. But that is kind of one of my takeaways. It's like, every time I watched Greenville, there were people hanging over the wall, and like, it's great. It makes for a fantastic atmosphere. I like it. I'm just not really sure how they're allowed.
Yeah, I guess there probably isn't a specific rule, as long as you're not interfering with the play. But
like,
yeah,
I mean, they're the right. Hit, you have to get off the wall.
Right. They are right there, you know, yeah, and they are loud. That's absolutely true. Nick Lucky and Bryson Worrell put on shows in this regional. Nick Lucky had one of the most insane bat flips like you'll ever see. He hit a home run on Monday, and friend of the pod, Nick De La Torre, described it as like when you're just mad at how hard you hit the ball, like, or like bored at how hard you hit the ball. I don't remember now which Nick said, but he just looked so disappointed that he'd hit this home run as hard as he hit it. But those two guys were incredible. Some great performances around the country. Bryson Worrell, fifth year guy, just continues to be a huge piece of this ECU success story. And this one will be a great fun this weekend with Texas coming there. And we'll get to the Horns here in a second. But first, check this out.
While you've been listening to this podcast so far, dozens and dozens of companies have filled jobs by using Indeed. Yep, Indeed's data shows there are roughly 16 hires a minute on Indeed. That's more than one every 4 seconds. While you've been listening to me talk about Indeed, another 3 hires have been made. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed is a powerful hiring partner that can help you do it all. Find great talent faster through time-saving tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. With Instant Match, over 80% of employers get quality candidates whose resume on Indeed matches their job description the moment they sponsor a job, according to Indeed data in the U.S. We at Baseball America are one of those companies that have used Indeed. Why? Because Indeed does make it easy to start hiring. It takes 10 minutes or less for most small business employers to post a job. Indeed does the hard work for you. When you pay to post a job, Instant Match shows you candidates whose resumes fit your description immediately so you can hire faster. With Indeed, you can select the skills that matter most to you. Add from a selection of over 100 Indeed assessment tests to your job post and hone in on the candidates who have the right skills faster. Indeed has such great talent. In fact, 3 out of 4 U.S. online job seekers search for jobs on Indeed each month, according to ComScore. Even better, Indeed's the only job site where you only pay for applications that meet your must-have requirements. Indeed is an incredibly powerful hiring partner, delivering 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined, according to Talent Nest in 2019. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Go to Indeed.com/Baseball America and you can claim your $75 credit. Offers good for only a limited time. That's Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. No one has a business like yours with all its strengths and challenges. To succeed, you need a hiring partner that adapts to your needs. You need Indeed. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring partner that can help you do it all. Find great talent faster through time-saving tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. With Instant Match, over 80% of employees get quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match their job description the moment they sponsor a job, according to Indeed data in the U.S. I'm talking to you about this because I'm a real live Indeed success story. Part of my job at Baseball America as editor-in-chief is to do hiring. And we had an opening for a creative director and a chief technology officer recently. In both of those cases, we posted to Indeed. We found quality candidates and we found the people that we hired through Indeed. And because Indeed made the process so easy, it allowed me to go back to what I prefer to doing and what is my main job, which is covering baseball. And we saw with Indeed that the posting process was easy. The evaluation process was easy. Even the process by which we offered someone the job and told everyone else, we're sorry, but we went in a different direction. All easier because of Indeed. And Indeed is the only job site where you only pay for applications that meet your must-have requirements. So start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/Baseball America. That offer's good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/Baseball America. That's Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Pay per qualified applicant not available for all users. You need to hire. You need Indeed.
All right. Welcome back. Let's keep this rolling. And we are going to Austin. Texas was the number 9 overall seed. And Joe, I feel like if anyone cruised this weekend, it was Texas. We talked coming into the weekend about how they had a tricky 4 in Air Force and maybe the best pitcher that a 4 seed would throw in Paul Skeens. Well, they dealt with that all right on Friday. They beat Louisiana Tech on Saturday in the winner's bracket. And then Air Force was the only number 4 seed to make it to a regional final, and Texas took care of them on Sunday. This was pretty clean for the Horns.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't think we have to really belabor this one too much. They gave up 6 runs in 3 games. They scored plenty both times against Air Force. Just a really pretty comprehensive effort. And, you know, you could nitpick that, okay, sure, they ended up with a 4 seed in a regional final. But if there's one thing Air Force can do, it's put some runs on the board, which, you know, Texas learned firsthand when they played them in the midweek earlier this season. And Texas really just never let the Falcons in that game. So if you're, you know, if you're someone, as we've talked about before, that is kind of thinking that maybe Texas is rounding into something close to the form we thought they were going to have to come into the season, I think this was a step in that direction for the Longhorns.
Disappointing weekend for DBU, which goes 0-2 and isn't going to do anything for anyone that felt like they didn't belong over other bubble teams. Obviously, I feel like, you know, what happens in the tournament doesn't matter. Like, that's not what the committee's, that doesn't validate or invalidate committee decisions. You know, DBU still had the resume they had. They still, to my feeling, like, it would have been hard to look at DBU and say, you know, you went 6-3 against regional hosts. Sorry, that wasn't good enough. But it did not make a whole lot of people happy that were fans of NC State, Rutgers, Wofford, whoever.
It is deep, that's just kind of the team DBU has been the second half of the year. I mean, they really struggle in Valley play, but you kind of thought that there'd just be enough DNA in this program to play better in regionals, because they almost always do. You know, that since joining the Missouri Valley, they've made it to a regional final in regionals every time they've been to regionals, except once, at least a regional final. Obviously, sometimes they've been to supers, but they've made at least a regional final all but once leading up to this season. This is only the second time since joining the Valley that that's happened. So you kind of expect them to play well on those kind of stages. And this year they just flatly didn't.
All right, let's go to Chapel Hill. North Carolina was the number 10 overall seed, and North Carolina wins this regional, but not without a whole lot of drama. And really, the drama started in the winner's bracket game on Saturday night against VCU. A couple of controversial calls went against UNC. One of them was an interference call, sliding into second base, whatever. Those calls are hard. The second call was an infield fly non-call, despite the fact that it could have been invoked. Runners were on first and second, less than two outs, and the ball fell in right behind the pitcher's mound, and in fact hit the second baseman's glove. A lot of debate about whether that was the right call or the wrong call. What I do know is that the umpiring crew basically refused to say anything at all. And, in terms of public statements after the fact, there is a statement. It indicates absolutely nothing. That call led Scott Forbes to get ejected from the game, because he still wasn't getting much of an explanation from the umpires. I guess Scott Forbes really went off, not in a like crazy manager ejection kind of way, just in a like I demand answers kind of way, and ultimately ends up getting suspended for two games for not leaving the field fast enough after being ejected. VCU goes on to win that game 4-3, and VCU should have been a great story coming out of Saturday night. Like, it was really unfortunate that VCU's second regional final in like 6 years was overshadowed by all of this, but it was not a great look for the umpires. It wasn't a great look for UNC either. Frankly, I didn't feel like I feel like the Tar Heels kind of lost their mind over like a 24-hour period there. Their AD Bubba Cunningham was very vocal on Twitter for a while. It was a whole scene. But UNC gets really resilient on Sunday. They go out and beat Georgia. That game was very close at the end. Georgia gave them a good run. And then North Carolina comes back and beats VCU twice, really took care of business. And they will now host a super regional, because they are paired with the Stillwater regional and, of course, Oklahoma State loss. So wild weekend, but ultimately a very successful weekend for the Tar Heels.
Yeah, they got it done. It was just not a good, we didn't mention this in the Greenville regional, because why would we have? It was ultimately not a big deal in terms of results, but yeah, a couple things umpiring wise that are just bothersome. Like in the ECU game, you know, Perry Costello pushes Bryson Worrell down the line to get him to run instead of looking at his home run. Just, we can't be touching players. I mean, because if the roles are reversed, like a player or coach is going to be suspended for that. I get that it's an umpire's job to kind of keep control of the game, but no one was bothered there. Like, this is the same game where you mentioned correctly, like Nick Lucky really looked at a home run extra long and everyone was fine.
Well, I think so. In fairness to Perry Costello, and I can't believe I'm even trying to be fair to Perry Costello, like, Nick Lucky hit the home run first, and then Bryson Worrell was staring at his home run
like going up the first baseline, and Coastal's dugout was on the first baseline, but there is no defense for pushing a player. Like, there's also very little defense for yelling at a player to run, but I like that happens literally every NCAA tournament, and it's awful every time, but I can never remember pushing the player to get him to move. And that was so over the top. I hope we don't see Perry Costello again in the NCAA tournament. I fear, however, that we will.
I'm reminded of last year, speaking of DBU, like Andrew Benefield hit a big home run last year, and the umpire did like a big motion, like run up the line, you know, like his arm. I remember that. Like,
yeah, it happened in Starkville Super Regional in 2019. Elijah McNamee hit a home run as Mississippi State was seeing off Stanford in game two of the clinching game. And in that, Mac hit a massive home run against Stanford's dugouts on the first baseline. He's just kind of staring at it, and that was a whole thing.
Yeah, it's I don't think I realized just quickly on the UNC situation. Like, I guess I hadn't really internalized the idea that, I think I slacked you this. Like, I don't know how I thought suspensions happened, and I know there's some oversight, like they can be appealed and reviewed and yada yada yada. But like, it had never really clicked with me that umpires are just levying suspensions on the field in the heat of the moment. Like, I remember in Knoxville, the Tony Vitello bump incident that people remember from this season, you know, Jeff Macias, the home plate umpire in that game, Vitello bumps him, and Jeff Macias, you can see very clearly on the replay, says, "That's a suspension. That's a suspension." And I just thought like he was saying like, "Hey, you're going to be suspended, like watch it," or, you know, or was just like taunting him in a way, like, you know what you just did. That's a suspension. No, but no, that was him telling him like, I am levying a suspension. And I don't think I'd really realize that was the process. And that seems bad. Like, I don't know.
I think the argument for that would be that, you know, in that case, like, that's a pretty technical, like, you touched me, that is a suspension. Like, that's how that goes down. But I could see how you could argue that in a case of a Sarloos or a Forbes ejection, where they're then being suspended because they aren't leaving the field fast enough, that if you empower the umpire to say, "I am suspending you, like, this is what's happening now," like, you are giving them another tool to end the argument to get the coach off the field. Because if you say like, "All right, we're suspending you two games right now," then the coach presumably is not going to want to risk a four game suspension. So like, that should end the argument, I think, would be how I would interpret like why umpires are allowed to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. That makes sense to me logically. So that is a good bit of insight there. I also, just to show that I'll be critical on both sides, like, to that point, I also, one of my greatest aggravations, especially this time of year, because everyone is every play is big, right, in the postseason. So it's just that, like, the amount of time coaches spend on the field, like, you know, so you look in these dugouts sometimes, and the head coaches are like, some are like sit or lean on the top step anyway, but like, they're basically standing on the field already, just like to be in position to go out there and ask for clarifications and ask for replays and ask for this or that or what have you. And like, it does get tiresome. So I can see how the umpires would like to have a different tool in their toolbox, because there's just so much time. And I get that you want to get everything right, and I know why we're doing this, but it doesn't mean it's not tiresome that so much time is spent with coaches on the field trying to get explanations and trying to talk to people and trying to get stuff sorted out. I'm not going to rail against replay. There was a lot of that this weekend, because I like the replay. I think we should be getting things right over be getting things done fast. But I do understand the frustration, and that just adds to it. There's just so much time standing on the field.
Are you sure you weren't watching much of the College Station Regional this weekend?
Was that a topic of discussion?
Jim Schlossnagel is like, kind of like, can you clarify what's going on here? Like, I'm not arguing. Just like, what's the rule in here? Like, it happens all the time.
We should just give coaches and umpires two-way radios. just keep a constant conversation going about what they're doing.
Works for the catchers.
That way we just keep everybody off the field who is not playing the game.
All right, let's move on to Hattiesburg. Southern Miss is the number 11 overall seed. And Southern Miss comes out on top here. They had to go through the loser's bracket to do it. LSU beat them 7-6 in the winner's bracket game on Saturday night.
in extra innings. LSU, the first two games of this against Kennesaw State and Southern Miss, they used big late comebacks to win. And then they were not quite able to complete a comeback in either regional final, either of the regional final games against Southern Miss. And so Southern Miss now goes out and they are in super regionals for the first time since 2009.
First time hosting a super regional as well, which is big for this program. And it's going to be a zoo with Ole Miss coming to town. It should be another fantastic in terms of, you know, Hattiesburg does not need a reason to turn out for Southern Miss. Like, they draw really well. You know, it's one of those places that historically draws really well. They love their team. So it's not like they'd be hurting for attendance, but my goodness, you talk about back-to-back weekends, just hitting the jackpot in terms of, maybe in a literal sense, but hitting the jackpot in terms of getting people to turn out and making these atmospheres awesome. Having LSU, having Southern Miss play three games against LSU over the weekend, and then now having Ole Miss come into town, like, my goodness, they couldn't have asked for much more there. But, kudos to Southern Miss, like, to stare down LSU, because after LSU wins that Saturday regional final, you kind of think like, okay, yes, Southern Miss's thing is pitching depth and this, that, and the other. Like, you kind of just think, okay, the jig is up on this. Like, this is LSU, which is just, you know, has a lot of fan support there, like, likes to play in big atmospheres. You know, their offense is just going to be too much here. They're starting to swing the bats better, so on and so forth. It felt like you had already kind of started to see that story play out. And Southern Miss just punches back. And like I said, just stared them down. And that's huge for, yes, they're playing at home, but, you know, that's a big spot there against an SEC team that has a lot of support in that stadium in its own right. And to be able to take them down like that was just so, so impressive to me.
Yeah, and LSU got up in one of those regional finals. I think it was the Monday game. They took an early lead, and Southern Miss was able to fight back and fight them off. And I just feel like so oftentimes you see the smaller conference team get to host, but they have this SEC or ACC power, and then they lose on Saturday night, and it's just kind of over from there. But yeah, definitely great job by Southern Miss to fight back, and very exciting super regional against Ole Miss ahead. I think a few people in that state might be interested. Quick note on that. They already announced game times. They gave that 3 o'clock local, both in each of the first 2 days. I still think that some fans will have plenty of time for pre-gaming going into that one, that the Pete will be absolutely rocking for however many games they play, whether that's two or three there against Ole Miss this weekend.
Make sure if you're going to those games, make sure you're hydrating. Like, it's going to be hot. Like, yes, have a pregame the heck out of it. Make sure you're hydrating though. Going to be super hot. Not a lot of shade at Pete Taylor Park. You know, make sure you are hydrating and staying on top of that. And then after it's over, like, postgame the heck out of it. Like, 3 o'clock starts are great, I think. Like, yes, go get some dinner. Go get some dinner too. You know, like, you know, but 3 o'clock starts are great for that. You know, you pregame, that's still a good amount of time to pregame with, as early as like the real fans start that stuff. That's still a good amount of time to pregame. After it's over, you can go get dinner. You can postgame it. You could cook dinner out on the grill. Like, I don't know what the parking, Teddy, you've been there. I've not been there. I don't know what the parking lot situation is like, but maybe you can postgame and cook something up in a tailgate situation afterwards.
You could postgame in the Roost.
You absolutely could. Yes. I mean, there's, you know, just, I think 3 o'clock starts are kind of perfect for that. You know, 7 o'clock start, you're kind of burned out by the time the game's over, but you know, you can really keep this thing going afterwards, with a 3 o'clock start. So, but yes, just make sure you're hydrating. That's my advice there. And sunblock.
Always good advice and relevant advice to where we're going next. That's Louisville, Dan McDonald, big on, I was going to say skincare, but that makes it sound like he's really into moisturizing, and I don't know that. What he is really into is sun protection.
That's right.
All right, Louisville, number 12 overall seed. They go out, and they win this regional. It was not easy for them. Michigan won the winner's bracket game on Saturday, 7-3. Stunningly was able to contain the Louisville offense, I would say. Like, I think that's fair to say stunningly they beat Jared Poland and contained the Louisville offense. I'm not surprised that Michigan beat Louisville once. I'm just surprised that it was 7-3 and not 17-13. But no matter, Louisville fights through the loser's bracket. They beat Oregon on Sunday morning, and then they sweep two games against Michigan. This was not without controversy either, though. However, as Michigan was leading this, the second regional final, the Monday one, in the eighth inning, and Louisville's rallying, Louisville gets a double that was looked at on replay. And if you look on the replay, it sure looks like the Michigan infielder tags the Louisville runner just before he gets on the base. Umpires did not see it that way. Again, this was replay reviewed. They did not see it that way. He is called safe. Louisville goes back, goes out, completes the rally, goes on to win 11-9 to win the regional. Brutal stretch for Michigan. Good on Louisville for still getting the hits. You know, you still do have to hit the ball, even if you get a mulligan or get a gift or whatever. But really feel for Michigan and with that call in that situation. But, you know, at the same time, like, they were not losing the game at that, or the game was not over at that point. Like, they just weren't able to recover from it.
Yeah, and even on a micro level. So I'm glad you detailed the replay there, because I knew there was a controversy. I did not, and I didn't spend hours seeking out, because I'm sure on Twitter somebody has supplied all kinds of like Zapruder film versions of the tag play in question, but I had not seen it.
Zapruder is right here. Like, it really is. If you're looking at it just initially on a replay, it's really hard to tell. But there's a way, like, they can blow up, you know, we've all seen this on the replay, they blow up the base, like they get the magnifying glass out or whatever. And when that happens, you can see the way the slide is happening, that the hand is going in towards second base, the tag is coming down, and you can see the player's fingers go up at the time when he contacts the glove, which to me sure seems like a tag. But like that's the level of granular we're talking about in saying that Michigan was hard done here. Otherwise, it looks like a bang bang play. You know, who knows?
So on a micro level too, I mean, later in that inning, you know, you've got Cameron Weston on the mound against Cameron Masterman with the game tied. He thinks he's got Masterman rung up on a called third strike. At least this podcast host thinks he had him rung up on a called third strike. Now, I'd not watched the whole game. I don't know what the zone was like all game. I don't have that context. However, did look like a called strike three, was not ruled strike three. Masterman hits literally the next pitch to the moon. And, you know, that gives Louisville the winning margin. So just a really tough span of a few minutes there for Michigan, goes from leading the game and likely out of it to being behind and not being able to catch back up.
Louisville now headed to College Station. That'll be a good super regional matchup. All right, let's go to Gainesville. Florida was the number 13 overall seed. They do not get out of the Gainesville regional for the second year in a row. However, it was Oklahoma that wins this regional. This was a wild regional in its own right. Differently wild than Stillwater, but like almost as insane, frankly. So Oklahoma won the winner's bracket game, beat Florida in that, dropping Florida down into the loser's bracket. Florida got some incredible performances to get out of the loser's bracket and back into the championship game and force a championship on Monday. They held off Central Michigan with a late rally on Sunday morning. And on Sunday evening, Carsten Finvold comes out of the bullpen with the bases loaded in the first inning and nobody out and throws nine innings and gets Florida to a rematch with Oklahoma. It was a sensational performance. He started it with five hitless innings. Just absolutely remarkable stuff. I think he'd thrown nine innings all season before that. It was insane. And then, you know, Florida is still, you know, they still have the second regional final to play, and Florida gets going really well in that game. They have a lead when the rain comes. Totally different game after the rain. ultimately, as Oklahoma is able to reverse that score and go on to win 5-4. Very, very compelling regional there in Gainesville.
Yeah, the Finvold game might get lost to time in history just because Florida didn't win that regional, but I think that is going to be something I'll remember for a while. I mean, it's obviously just that looking at the importance of that spot and what he did, yes. But like, even within that game, I happened to be watching Squeeze Play at the time, and they were talking, you know, Chris Burke and I think Matt Schick and Rooney were on at the time. And there was a point there in that outing, I think maybe in the third or fourth inning, where the conversation was kind of like, well, you know, this has been effective because they're slowing Oklahoma's bats down. Like, Finvold obviously is not throwing hard. Most of the rest of Florida staff does. That's why it's been effective, but you don't want to overexpose him. And there was a point where, you know, Oklahoma scores a couple runs. I think there was like it was a Blake Robertson double or something like that. And one of them said, and I don't remember who it is, I'm not playing coy or protecting them because, like, you know, they don't need it, first of all. But like, one of them in the studio said, like, it feels like one batter too late, you know, before they made a move here. And I'm sure in the dugout, there was some talk about, like, do we yank him here? Do we leave him? They leave him, and obviously it paid off handsomely. So it just is a great example of how just these little micro decisions, most of which we are not privy to as viewers, end up having large bearing. Because who knows, you know, maybe Florida goes to the bullpen there with Finvold and thinks they probably made a smart move, right? Getting him out of there before things got really bad, and they end up losing that game. And, you know, we don't get that performance. But, you know, even before that for Florida, you know, they had to stop Central Michigan from scoring a run with the bases loaded in the ninth inning, you know, down a run the day before. So, or earlier in that same day, I should say. So, impressive run, but ultimately Oklahoma just kind of, like they have this whole postseason, just found a big hit at the right time. You know, Peyton Graham 2-run homer tied it, and then they went up. And it's going to be a really fascinating super regional in Blacksburg this weekend, because I think both those teams are playing really well, and we'll obviously have time to preview it. But I think that is one of the more intriguing supers we have.
What I'm calling the Pete Hughes Bowl. So we'll definitely get into that one on Thursday. The Oklahoma, you mentioned Peyton Graham, he was sensational this weekend. And I mean, I'm not surprised Oklahoma won this regional. I made it pretty clear I thought they should have hosted anyway. They're playing incredibly well right now, but to go out and win the way they did, very impressive. Just a great weekend for the Sooners as they continue to stay hot. All right, let's go to Auburn, number 14 overall seed. Auburn. They made this completely academic. You could tell that ESPN thought that this was going to be a really compelling regional. I know a lot of people listed this as maybe the most loaded regional, but you could tell ESPN agreed because Tom Hart and Kyle Peterson were on the call here. UCLA, Florida State, Auburn, an intriguing four in southeastern Louisiana. And all this was an Auburn Tiger show. They scored roughly a billion runs, actually 51 runs in three games. They swept. They were never pushed. It was a command performance by a team that a lot of people didn't know what to expect from. They hadn't played since Tuesday of the SEC tournament, and it did not matter. They did everything you want and then some.
Yeah, they took advantage too. I mean, they absolutely earned it. Are you okay there? Did you got emotional and choked up? Is that what happened there?
Yes, I was a touch late on the call. I'm sorry there.
It's all right. We press on. We're fighting through it. They absolutely earned it. I mean, they just smashed the ball all weekend. They also kind of, you know, took advantage. And this is what you have to do. Like, this is not a slight on them. They took advantage of a couple teams that came a little bit, I feel like, limping in. You know, they caught UCLA. You know, they didn't have to play UCLA until the regional final, and this is a UCLA team that has dealt with injuries on the mound and is thinner than they would like to be. And so they caught UCLA at the exact right moment there earlier in the regional. If they catch them in the winner's bracket game or what have you, maybe it's a different story. Probably not with the way Auburn's swinging the bat, but maybe. And they, you know, Florida State's offense, is just kind of is what it is. And when they didn't pitch well, because they gave 21 runs to Auburn in the winner's bracket game, like, that was obviously going to doom Florida State. And we saw that when then Florida State in an elimination game held UCLA to 2 runs, but only scored 1. And that's problematic. So Auburn was able to kind of, it felt like, even though they didn't have anything to do with the results that were independent of them. Like, it did feel a little bit like they were a little bit of a puppeteer here, just kind of like everything seemed to break just their way in this regional. And on top of it, they played really, really well. So I have to admit, like, I thought this was, I saw the flaws in Florida State, UCLA. Those are two programs that I think you and I would agree were just like very meh at the end of the year. So I was a little less enthused by the draw, but I did think, okay, these teams are talented enough. If Auburn's not ready to play, this could get interesting, but clearly the Tigers were very much ready to play.
I don't think we spent enough time talking about how good and consistent Auburn has been under Butch Thompson. Three super regionals in four full seasons. Chris Burke made the point that, like, I hadn't thought of before. He made it on Squeeze Play. The last three times Auburn's been in the NCAA tournament, they've won a regional. I mean, that's crazy impressive. They're now trying to, for the second straight time that they made the tournament, go to Omaha. They're two wins away from that. This is an Auburn team that was picked to finish last in the SEC West by the SEC coaches in their preseason poll. Last place. That's what they're picked to do. And they hosted a home regional for the first time since 2010. They're back in super regionals, and they're just playing outstanding baseball right now. I mean, I know I talk about how great Butch Thompson is a lot, but just incredible job this year. All right, number 15 seed Maryland hosted the College Park Regional. That's where I was this weekend. And UConn, though, UConn, the number three seed, comes out. They win the regional. This is the first super regional trip for UConn since 2011. And the clincher came 11 years to the day after they clinched the 2011 regional. It also, Jim Penders pointed out, 12 years to the day after they were eliminated in their home regional in 2010 in Norwich. So June 6th is a busy day in UConn program history. And it has some pluses and some minuses. And Jim Penders said he was thinking more probably about the time that they lost that home regional than the time that they won the regional yesterday. But they come out, they win this regional against Maryland. UConn played very well throughout the weekend. They beat Wake Forest in their opener. Then they win the winner's bracket against Maryland. They survive Maryland in the finals. The Terps played really well on Sunday night in an extra innings game, forcing a winner take all. UConn gets up big in Monday's game. They get up 9-1 early. Maryland fights back. And at one point, it looked like Maryland had all the momentum late in the game. In the eighth inning, it looked like they had cut the deficit to one run. A runner's interference call, however, negated that. And from there, UConn, Justin Willis, their excellent closer, absolutely slammed the door. There was no more comeback hope for Maryland there at the end. And a really great season for Maryland comes to an end. But what a job by UConn. What a job by Jim Penders. That's a team that I was skeptical of a lot of the season. Now they're going to super regionals, and only Tennessee has more wins than them.
And they're set up pretty well, I feel like. I think the regional format is tougher on UConn than the super regional format is, because they're anytime, you know, you have high quality pitching, but maybe not the depth of pitching, the supers are for you. And that's kind of where UConn is at. They've got a small number of arms that are really good and can compete against just about anybody. And then when those get short is when they get in trouble, which is part of what's impressive about what they were able to do this weekend in winning that regional. With Maryland, it feels a little like, you and I, Teddy, talked about this, that like in the end, what really ended up being most notable about Maryland is like, man, could they mash? But we spent a lot of time the first half of the season kind of, you know, gawking at how good their pitching was. And there was still aspects of that, like Savakul and Ramsey were as steady as they needed to be throughout the entirety of the season. And Savakul really kind of ran through the tape and had a really good Big Ten season. But as the season went on, like, their pitching staff really backslid. It was a team that had a 6 ERA in Big Ten play, and I don't need to remind our listeners that it wasn't exactly a banner season in the Big Ten in terms of the quality of competition there. So, some of it is long seasons, and Nick Dean was injured, and I'm sure there are other injuries, little nicked up things here and there. Like, I'm sure there is that, but they on the mat, it just kind of looked like in this regional that kind of came back to bite a little bit, where they weren't able to do anything against UConn early in the regional final, and then they gave up 10 to UConn in the winner's bracket game, and it just feels like at the wrong time that kind of cropped up on them, and they scored plenty of runs but couldn't hold UConn off the scoreboard. Quickly on this, I will allow you to give us some color from the College Park Regional, because there was a lot of talk about, I mean, the atmosphere looked amazing, but obviously the facility is what it is. What was it just generally quickly like to be covering that regional when we kind of went into it wondering how they were going to be able to pull it off?
It was, from an atmosphere perspective, it was amazing. The Maryland fans absolutely showed out. There were a lot of students there, especially on Monday and Sunday. And they definitely made themselves heard. And so that part was amazing. You also saw facility limitations in other ways. Like, there's literally like one way to get into the stadium. And it wasn't like the line was crazy long at any point that I saw, but there's only so much concession in there as well. And, but it was, I think it was great that Maryland was able to find a way to pull this off on campus. It was something really special. And, the future of that program looks to be very bright. Rob Vaughn is the youngest coach in major conferences. He certainly seems to have things rolling there. As long as Maryland's able to keep him happy and keep him in College Park, you have to feel good about where that program is headed, and this weekend was a great advertisement for that. All right, Statesboro Regional. Georgia Southern hosted as the number 16 seed. They were not involved in the regional final. However, as they go 1-2, it was Texas Tech and Notre Dame battling it out. And ultimately, Notre Dame swept through this regional. Notre Dame sure felt like they should have hosted. A lot of people felt like Notre Dame should have hosted. And they really went out and made their case as clear as they could make it this weekend. However, the games were all tight. They won by a total of 4 runs. They played 2 1 run games against Texas Tech, and they won them both. So good on Notre Dame on a weekend when offense went crazy that they were able to play their game and pitch really well. But it was not the most compelling regional, because there was some rain issues that got them off schedule and all the rest of it, but it was well played and well pitched.
Yeah, no doubt. It was kind of weird. I mean, I don't know much about the, Clement Stadium down in Statesboro. I don't know if how much it, maybe plays this way, or if it was just like a fluke. Certainly it's weird that Texas Tech got to the regional final and scored 8 total runs on the weekend. That was a bit strange. You know, Georgia Southern going 1-2, this is not an indictment of them to say this. I don't think, I don't mean it to be, but I think we kind of saw that coming maybe a little bit, because this draw was just so tough, and hosting for your first time is a hard thing to do. Like, Virginia Tech breezing through their first time hosting in a while, at least, is not like, that's not the norm here. Like, what Georgia Southern did is kind of something we see from time to time, especially for hosts that are, at the back end of this top 16. So, and they didn't play poorly. They just got beat. I don't really know what to make of the lack of run scoring here, especially in light of the runs we saw everywhere else. Like, I think we kind of inherently understand that maybe the Stanford regional would be a little less offensive because it's, cooler, a little bit cooler atmosphere, temperature wise, bigger ballparks, West Coast, all of it. But having the Statesboro regional be as pitching centric as it was a bit of a surprise. And, I'll admit this is one I didn't see a ton of too. Part of it is because once regionals kind of fall behind, it's kind of hard to, like, when you're watching regional elimination games or regional final games, it's a little bit harder to go back to games that are earlier in the bracket because they don't feel as important. So you end up not catching up as much. But regardless, a lot of close wins for Notre Dame, like you said, in this regional. I don't know what to expect going into the weekend because I don't know exactly what to make of this particular weekend. And obviously Tennessee presents a particularly difficult challenge.
Yes, a uniquely difficult challenge coming for Notre Dame, but it must be said, Link Jarrett just won back regionals in back-to-back years. Notre Dame like has never done that before. Truly, truly impressive for Notre Dame and having to go on the road this year, unlike last year. So they will play Tennessee this weekend, and we will break that down and all of the eight super regional matchups on the Thursday edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. So make sure you are subscribed to the Baseball America Podcast in your favorite podcast app, be that Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. We go at it twice a week throughout the season and the postseason. So we'll be back here on Thursday with those super regional previews. In the meantime, you can read plenty of stuff over at baseballamerica.com. Our written super regional previews will be going up over the next few days, hopefully starting tomorrow. Need to really get going on those because this week flies by we'll have baseball again before we know it on Friday. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill and Joe is at Joe Healy BA. Great start to the NCAA tournament. Hoping for another great weekend here as we get ready for super regionals. I know Joe and I are enjoying it. I'm sure you are as well. Look, you just listened to like an 80-minute podcast about college baseball. You must have enjoyed this weekend. And so hopefully we could get another great weekend of weather and baseball around the country for super regionals. For Joe, I'm Teddy. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.